they're so much fun because you can be two different people. You just pop on a mask. One minute, you're Bruce Wayne, the benevolent billionaire. The next minute, you put on a mask and you become Batman, Cape Crusader, and Guardian of Gotham. It just feels so good. Now, just so we're clear, I am not the only one right now in the room wearing a mask. Because other than like masquerade balls and Halloween, church is one of the favorite places for people to wear masks. You know, you get in the car, someone in the family made you late, everyone's tense, people are shouting, one brother hit another, and the person driving goes, "Don't make me pull this car over." And you get to church and you go, "Hi, how are you?" "Oh, living the dream, baby, praise the Lord." And look, I don't want to be too hard on anybody because we're just trying to be nice, I get it. But there are also masks that we wear in church that are a little more devious. In fact, the number one accusation against the church, and you know it, is those people there, they're all hypocrites. Now, I don't know if all of you are hypocrites. I know I'm one of them, so I get it. And if you're new to CCV, maybe you're a first-time guest, or maybe you've been in church, this is your first time for a long time, or I don't know, ever. If you have ever said that there's hypocrites in church, I want you to know two things. First of all, there are hypocrites everywhere. Like there are hypocrites on Wall Street and your street, in the White House and your house. That, like, they're everywhere, but it is true. If you've ever said that, it is true that wearing a mask in church, it just is a little more devious because you expect people who broker in the truth to be truthful people. You know who agrees with you? Jesus. True fact, he was the first person to ever call religious people a hypocrite. This word hypocrite in Jesus' day was a technical term, came straight out of Greek theaters. It was for someone who wore a mask on stage. Sometimes the single actor would play three or four parts. He would come on with a villain's mask or a happy face or a sad face. And one actor could play multiple people. That's kind of like a dating website. You ever been on one of those? You may not exactly get the truth in the profile. Or maybe not a dating website. Maybe just, I don't know, Facebook, social media. If you know about masks, if you've ever, I don't know, got a job or gone to school or breathe, it's human nature, because the reason I put on a mask is because I want something out of you. And if I put the right mask on, if I become the person you want me to be, I get from you what I want to get. And I go to the next person, I have to wear a different mask. I go to the next person and I wear a whole nother mask. The reason that is so difficult is because masks are exhausting. I mean, there is some advantage you get from masks, but the ROI of a mask is never as great as the energy it costs you to keep track of all the masks that you put on. How do I know? Experience. When I was a teenager, there were three me's. There was the me that went to school, the me that went to church, and the me that lived at home. And I remember feeling like how dangerous it would be if my parents actually knew what I was doing with my friends. That's why I didn't bring my friends home much. Didn't want them to, you know, those worlds to collide. And I remember thinking, if my friends actually came to church with me, they would be stunned, because I was like, who are you? And if the people at church saw the way I acted at home, I'd probably get a whooping. Look, we play these different roles to get something out of people, but I came to a place, I don't know what it was in my young life, but I came to a place that I just said, these are not worth the cost. And it took me a while, because masks are sometimes sticky. Sometimes you even fool yourself. But it took me a while to lay all the masks down and become just one person. But when I did, the freedom that came from that was augmented by an accelerated spiritual growth. Because while you're wearing masks, you cannot grow spiritually as fast as when you live in freedom. Does it make sense? So let's talk about that. Around here, One of our core values is this very issue of shedding the masks. Now, we're in a series on core values, and Ashley introduced us to the CCV core values, and he is dead on. Your core values create culture, and your culture is far more important even than your strategy. If you're in business, or if you have a sports team, or if you have a family, your core values are more important than actually the things you do. Who you are is more important than what you do. We all know this. So to be clear, our first core value is a commitment to excellence. And it doesn't take a person very long visiting CCV. But the first time you realize these people care about details. I want to tell you why. Because of our second core value, a heart for evangelism. We're not a club for insiders. The reason we are so concerned about details, from the coffee shop to the parking lot, from the kids' ministry to the stage, is because we want every man, woman, and child in this valley to have the widest possible front door to meet and encounter Jesus Christ. Third core value for us is relationships. And last week, it was a great weekend last week, Ashley talked about our neighborhood groups. You know why we keep talking about those? And will keep talking about those? Is because circles are better than rows. Now, rows are fantastic for inspiration. Weekends are awesome. But if you want transformation, that will only happen in circles. Inspiration can happen shoulder to shoulder. Transformation requires face to face. And the good news coming out of last weekend, you know how many people signed up for neighborhood groups? First time, brand new, 2,000 new people are committed to neighborhood groups. That brings our total signups to 13,000 people who have said, hey, we're bought in. We're going to do life in circles. And if this church seems like a large church to you, it's because you're not in a neighborhood group. Join a group to get that face-to-face interaction. That's how we grow around here. Now, today we're talking about integrity. And I want to be crystal clear with our definition. So if you come to any of our campuses and you go into the office, we're going to display our core values to help create a culture. Under this core value, there's a tagline. I love it. Zero gap between what we say and do. Zero gap between what we say and do. So what does that look like? Well, we say that we are committed to excellence, and this is one of our primary core values. So what does that look like? Friday, August the 3rd, we were hosting a funeral here at CCD. We do a lot of those, especially for police and firemen. This is just our way of giving back to the community. This police officer had been killed, you remember, was killed in the line of duty. It was going to be a huge funeral. And the first impressions pastor, Craig Johnson, said, our funerals are going to have the same level of excellence as our weekend service. Anytime we have guests on campus, it's going to be the same level of excellence. Problem. A storm ravaged Phoenix the night before. There was debris at your house, my house. It was everywhere. So Craig Johnson shows up at 6:30 in the morning with a leaf blower to make sure that our guests get the same experience of excellence as anyone on the weekend. That's what it means to have zero gap between what you say and do. Far and away, our greatest core value, this is not even close, is a heart for evangelism. So this last Easter, we had a wonderful service, and many, many first-time guests came. And one of the guests was a 71-year-old woman. She came with her daughter, Dana. And on their way back out to the car, her mother's not terribly mobile, so they're just kind of moving slowly, and they're going by the baptistry, and there's all these people getting baptized. And Dana, kind of kidding, kind of, says to her mom, Mom, you ready to get baptized? At 71. Well, she wasn't, so they go home, they get in the car, they have a great family dinner, as you do, you know, and kids are in the backyard playing in the afternoon. And her mom comes out, grandkids are all out there, tears streaming down her face. She says, is it too late? Dana says, too late for what, Mom? Is it too late for me to get baptized? Actually, yes, it is. Let me explain. Easter is like our Super Bowl around here. So all hands on deck, volunteer staff, everybody works really hard. But I promise you, in the afternoon, all of us are horizontal and unconscious. Like nobody is answering your phone. So Dana's calling. The only person with a live phone from CCV was a security guard who had the after hours emergency phone. His name is Will Tracy. He serves on our security team. He's an awesome guy. And Dana says, is there any way that I can come down there and baptize my mom? And he said, absolutely. You come down. I'll meet you in the parking lot. I'll unlock the baptistry. He didn't just unlock the baptistry. He unlocked the stock of the changed t-shirts. He got her a t-shirt, some shorts, a towel. He wanted to make sure that Dana's mother had the exact same experience that everybody else did earlier that day. And when it was over, he put them in his security cart and drove them back to the car in the parking lot. That's what it means to have zero gap between what you say and do. That moment when Dana baptized her mother was captured on an iPhone. And it is such a great picture of what integrity looks like. The power of this picture is not in the water. It's actually in the foreground. This is always true about integrity. Somebody is watching from the next generation. This is why this is so important to us at CCV and why it is a core value. So as we go back to the Bible to try to figure out what does God say about integrity, it's interesting. You can Google it and it'll pop up all over New Testament, Old Testament. You know what the word actually means? In the original language, the original Hebrew word means wholeness. Integrity is wholeness. There's not three of you. There's not multiple masks. There's not a divided personality. There is just one you. And so I want to ask you to ask yourself this question. Is there just one you? Is there a work you that is different than the family you? Is there a sport you that's different than the dating you? Or is there just one you? Because according to the Bible, integrity is all about singularity, being one person no matter who you're with or when you're with them. And as I looked at this word throughout the Bible, it popped up in three books of the Bible, far more than any others. You can probably guess that Proverbs is one of the books that integrity is found in. Like, it's thick in Proverbs. That makes sense. It's this repository of wisdom. The other two books really took me off guard. Because I've studied the Bible a little bit. I did not see this one coming. The other two books of integrity, you want to guess? Job and Psalms. And the more I thought about it, the more it made perfect sense. Because Job and David, David wrote the majority of the Psalms, great King David. Job and David in the Bible are the two greatest examples of integrity. Now, if you know anything about David, you probably heard about David and Goliath, right? The giant killer, David and Goliath. Have you heard about David and someone else? David and Bathsheba. She was his next door neighbor's wife with whom he committed adultery. He had an affair. And then to cover up the affair, he had his neighbor assassinated on the front lines of battle. How in the world can a guy who commits adultery and then murders to cover it up, how can he be a man of integrity? That's a good question. To put it in Bible vernacular, David is called a man after God's own heart. How can he be a man after God's own heart when he does all of this stuff? See, this is an important question for me. It might be an important question for you. Because I've got baggage of my own, yet I want to be a man after God's own heart. Here's the secret. Being a man after God's own heart is not about the heart you have. It's about the heart you're after. And the reason David could be a man after God's own heart is because he had no masks. If you met David, you met the one and only David. If you met David on the throne or if you met him fleeing from his enemies in the desert, it's the same David. If you meet David in a field of battle or in a field shepherding sheep, it's the same David. And because he was just one man, when he fell, when he failed, he could repent immediately, because God can take care of any of your failures. He cannot, however, take off your mask. That's on you. And as long as we're wearing a mask, we can't repent when we fail. Listen to how David describes integrity in Psalm 25. May integrity and uprightness protect me, because my hope, Lord, is in you. Just two verses later, very next Psalm, 26:1. Declare me innocent, O Lord, for I have acted with integrity. I have trusted in the Lord without wavering. And throughout the Psalms, every use of integrity is from the pen of David, with one exception. It's not what David wrote, but was what was written about David, 78. And David shepherded them with integrity of heart. With skillful hands, he led them. David is the classic example of a man of integrity. And it's so good for me to see that, because with my own imperfections, I don't have hope of being perfect. I do have hope of being singular. And if God will accept me with all of my failures, as long as I'm honest with God, I think I can be a man after God's own heart. The other guy is Job. Maybe you've heard about him. I'm just guessing, because nobody really knows. I think Job is the oldest book of the Bible. It's so old, we don't even know how old it is. And yet, in the modern world, did you know that Job is studied in secular universities more than any other book of the Bible? It is. Two departments. One is the literature department, because this book, I think it was a stage play, honestly. Because you could put a single spotlight on stage, and here comes Job, and he gives this monologue. He's complaining about God. Why is all this happening to me? His three friends are complaining about Job: Eliphaz, Bildad, Zophar. They each take their turns accusing him, saying, Job, what did you do? I mean, just admit it. God is striking you down because you did something really, really bad. And Job gets up and speaks again. No, honest to God, I am a man of integrity. And then Eliphaz, Bildad, Zophar, Job. It's a fabulous example of a play. But the other department that looks at it is philosophy. Because Job asks a question that every single one of you have asked. In fact, this question is the single most difficult question in philosophy and religion. Every religion asks it, every philosophy asks it. The question is, why do bad things happen to good people? You've asked that. And we've talked about that around here, and we'll talk about it again. But right now, I want to turn the question into a more important question. Not why do bad things happen to good people, but how do good people react when bad things happen? See, that's a question that you and I can sink our teeth into today. The book of Job begins just with an introduction to this ancient righteous man. It says, in the land of Uz, there was once a man named Job. He was a blameless man of complete integrity. That's verse 1. The book opens with his integrity. Verse 6, the plot thickens. One day, the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. I don't know why Satan's with the angels, but there he is. The Lord said to Satan, where have you come from? And Satan answered the Lord, from roaming throughout the earth, going back and forth on it. I've suspected as much. And then you get to verse 8. This is where it really gets interesting. The Lord asked Satan, have you noticed my servant Job? He is the finest man in all the earth. He is blameless, a man of complete integrity. He fears God and stays away from evil. Oh, that God would say that about me. And Satan said, of course he fears you. Of course he's a man of integrity. You gave him everything. He's a spoiled child. He has wealth, he has health, he has a beautiful wife, a lot of kids, and he's famous. Why would he not fear you? And God said, oh, no, no. You take all that away from Job, he will be the same person in riches and in poverty, in health or in sickness. He is the same guy. And Satan said, there's no way. And God said, way. Satan said, no way. And God said, okay, I'm going to give you permission to take away his wealth. I'm going to give you permission to take away his family, but you do not touch him. God gave a green light. Job has no clue. God and Satan get in an argument, and Job gets caught in the crossfire. Satan stripped him of his family, of his wealth, of his house, of his health, and he is miserable. The only thing Satan did not take away from him was his wife, and he probably should have. Have you read the story? She's a nasty woman. Seriously, she comes up to Job and says, why don't you just curse God and die? And in our day, it would add, so I can get the insurance money. I don't know what her problem was, but Satan left her there to add to his suffering. This poor man has all his friends coming around and are accusing him of, what'd you do? What'd you do? Job never, now he complained, he got upset, he got depressed, but he never let go of his integrity. Job also is a man after God's own heart. And I'm just wondering, if we were to invite David on stage here and Job on stage here, and if I could just interview them, I think they would say four things about integrity that you and I need to know. And I'd probably start with Job. I think he would say one truth about integrity is that it's highest when your life is at its lowest. See, Job had integrity when he was rich, but you didn't see it as clearly until he was poor. He was a man of integrity when he had health and family, but you didn't see his integrity until everything was stripped away from him. And I know that some of you right now are having a Job-like experience. Maybe it's a physical thing that you're going through. Or maybe you're awake at night because you don't know where your child is or if he or she is even still alive. Maybe your suffering is through a relationship that you're in that's falling apart right in front of you, or a business that's crashing right before your eyes. I want to say to you that your integrity will best be seen not in your success, but in your suffering. And I don't want to go through what Job went through. And I don't want you to go through what Job went through. But I'm telling you honestly, if I just take off the mask and speak to you honestly, if you were to ask me, what would you endure so that God could win an argument with Satan? What would you be willing to suffer if it would make Jesus famous? Anything. Anything. And your suffering may be the very thing that brings the greatest glory to God, even if you never get a glimpse of the argument going on in heaven. The second thing, the lesson I think that Job would say to us is that integrity is completely within your control. David couldn't control his enemies. Job couldn't control his friends. Job couldn't control his health. David couldn't control the timing of his throne. You can't control most of your life, but your integrity is the one thing that you and you alone have complete control over. It reminds me of a story from 2005. Andy Roddick was a tennis player. In fact, he was the highest-ranked tennis player in the United States at the time. And he's playing Fernando Verdasquez of Spain. It came, and Roddick was just beating him. Came down to the last point. Verdasquez was serving, and he served the first serve out. The second serve was long, and the line judge called it out. Roddick has the game, set, match. But Roddick was looking at the line, and he saw the ball nick the line. So he went to the line judge and said, it wasn't out, it was in. I refuse to take the point. And the line judge allowed Roddick to overrule him. So Verdasquez gets another serve, which he won. And then another point, and another point, he won the game. And then he won another game, and won a set. And then he won another set, and he won the match. Roddick lost the match, but he won his integrity. So let me ask you, what is your integrity worth? A game? an evening of pleasure, a business deal? Like, what would it be worth to you to lose your integrity? Whatever your answer, consider this quote from Joe Sabini: how you do anything is how you do everything. And it's easy to say, it's no big deal. Like, it nicked the line, but the line judge called it out. It's no big deal. I know they gave me a little too much change, but it's no big deal. It's easy to say it's no big deal until you lose your integrity, which is the only deal that matters. The third lesson I think David would come and say to you is integrity is revealed in reactions more than actions. Like, you don't get to plan and prepare for your moments of integrity. If you give me enough time, I can wear any mask. I will always come to the right decision if I can prepare my heart. But integrity is never a final exam you prepare for. It's always a pop quiz. Someone cuts you off on the freeway. Boom. In that moment, your integrity comes out. Your spouse insults you in public with your friends. Your integrity comes out. See, integrity is always a pop quiz. That's why masks will destroy your ability to respond in the moment the way God would want you to respond. Here's the last observation. Integrity is your legacy. This is what you pass down to your children. The book of Proverbs says, the godly walk with integrity. Blessed are their children who follow them. That is always true. Integrity is not just an issue of you and your mask. It is the issue of the mask that you put on your children. Let me tell you two stories, and then I'll tie a bow between them. In the days of Al Capone, Prohibition, he was running booze and prostitutes. He was known for murder and burglary. He was a bad man, but he was protected. This is not a lawyer joke. He actually had a really, really good lawyer named Easy Eddie. Easy Eddie made sure that all of the illegal activities could never land on Capone. But then Easy Eddie had a little boy. He loved that little boy, lived for that little boy. And as the boy grew, Easy Eddie grew more uncomfortable knowing that someday his son would see the mask that he wore. And so it came a crisis of conscience where he decided, I have got to come clean. And he went to the FBI and he said, you will never get Capone on his illegal activities, but you can get him on tax evasion. And you might remember from the history books how Capone went to prison because of Easy Eddie's testimony. And he knew it endangered his life. Sure enough, a year later, dark street in Chicago, hail of gunfire, Easy Eddie is killed. That's story number one. Story number two, World War II, the first pilot to receive the title of ace was a guy by the name of Lieutenant Butch O'Hare. And he got that honor because in one foray, the whole squadron takes off and they're gonna go attack the enemy. Someone neglected to top off Butch's tank. And he reported to his commander, hey, I'm low on fuel, ordered him back. He didn't want to go back, but he had to. On his way back to the ship, he caught sight of a Japanese squadron of fighter pilots surprise attacking their ship. He doesn't have time to get the squadron back. He doesn't have time to warn the ship. He just goes in, guns blazing. The cameras on his wing show his heroism, and he takes down one plane after another. Five Japanese planes he shoots down, and now they're all on him. He runs out of ammunition, so he starts dive bombing the planes, trying to clip their wings. This guy is a kamikaze against the kamikazes. It freaked him out, and they bugged out. He limps back to the ship. And he was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor for bravery. A year later, Lieutenant Butch O'Hare was killed in an aerial combat at 29 years old. His hometown of Chicago honored him so much that they wanted his memory to stand in the city. So today, They've named the airport after him, Chicago O'Hare Airport. Now, what do those two stories have in common? Butch O'Hare is Easy Eddie's son. What you do with your integrity affects the next generation. That's why around here it is so important for us as a core value to be men and women of integrity. And ladies, I know this is just as important to you, but I want to talk to the guys. Men, integrity is all about showing up. If you say to your son or your daughter, I'll be at the game, you show up. If it's your weekend for visitation, you don't have to be a perfect dad, but you do need to show up. When you come home from work, you show up. And I suppose there's 100 ways every one of us could apply integrity to our lives. I want us to agree on one way that all of us will apply integrity to our lives. There are 13,000 people signed up for neighborhood groups. They'll start the first week in September. Here is the takeaway for all of us. If you sign up, you show up. Can we agree to that? Because CCV is not me, it's we. The integrity that all of us show will minimize the accusation of those on the outside saying they're hypocrites on the inside. It will free you from the mask that you're wearing that is exhausting you, and it will give you the only valuable thing that you can pass on to your children. This is so serious that I want to invite you to pray with me. Normally I would pray, we'd be dismissed. I want you to share in the prayer, and I'm going to put it on the screen so that we can all read it out loud together. It is a simple statement of scripture, and I think it would be appropriate if everyone on all campuses stood right now in honor of God. If you mean it, then read this prayer with me. But as for me, I shall walk in my integrity. Redeem me and be gracious to me. God bless you. Have a great week.